Blog Talk Radio.
Been kind of lonely without you being here.
Yeah, I was out on the road going through Georgia and South Carolina. I didn't make it to Alabama. Sorry, Jesse. I'm so sorry I didn't make it to Alabama. But, yeah, I was out on the road with brand new Congress, and I got to tell you, if you're an incumbent, you need to talk to your people. Because from what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, people are ready for this, you know, the Bernie revolution. They are not having it. They are not stopping, and we are ready to put power back in the hands of the people. So if you haven't caught a tour, go to the website, brandnewcongress.org/tour. There's a tab. Find a meeting in your city. Come and check us out. We had a great meeting in Atlanta. We were in Augusta, Athens, Savannah, Charleston. Big ups to Savannah. Savannah came out really, really big for us. We had a really great meeting, some great people down there. And I just wish, you know, you could have been with us. So, but I'm a little tired, and there's a lot to do. But, you know me.
Yeah.
You know me. So, but there's a lot going on locally too. So, and I'm very proud.
Yeah, there's a lot going on locally. So where did you? So you was leaving town as the protest was starting to. What did you think about that? Because I was down that Thursday. Because you know I was supposed to be in with you in Atlanta on Thursday. That Thursday, but I got called up in the protest. You know, me and George Cheedy was down in the protest down there. So, from your perspective, you know, being the first, you know, one of the rare times that you were not on the ground or something, what was you thinking as you was watching it?
Well, the first thing is, like you said, okay, everything jumps off when I leave town, but it was a really, really hectic week because we were supposed to do an event with Black Men for Bernie. So that's when the Sterling and Castile shootings jumped off. So they went down to Florida to do a press conference in front of the DNC about the shooting, which we wholeheartedly support. They have been fierce advocates. So then I'm sitting up there in Athens, and I'm watching everything jump off here. And I got to say, I was really proud at everybody. You know, I was proud for everybody who came out to participate in the protest. You know, I heard some comments come out of Mary, and it was like, you know, he starts talking, and you go, oh, okay, and then he says something, and you go, there you go. There you have it. But I think all in all, everyone did well. I'm looking forward to the meeting for the mayor sitting down with the protesters who went. They went to the governor's mansion. So, It is something good to see. The only request that I ask is that everybody who came out for them protests, well, we really need you, because after Trayvon Martin, we filled those streets, right? in Atlanta. And then when it came time to, you know, Senator Vincent Ford, he gave us a bill to repeal Stand Your Ground. We couldn't get 10 of them people to come back in. So if you really want this, I need for y'all to stay in the fight, not just in the streets, but when it hits under the Gold Dome to where the real solutions can happen. If you don't like what the mayor and the city council, and Lord knows we can talk about these citizen review boards all day, if you don't like the way use of force is being done, then you need to change the people who are making the decision. Because you can't keep going asking these people the same thing. It's like with immigration reform. We're going to the Republicans. Can we have it now? No. Can we have it now? No. They're going to keep telling you no. They keep telling you no. Stop asking them. Become those people. Run for office. That's the one part we haven't gotten. We've got plans. We've got strategies. We got policies. But if you don't have the right people to implement them, it don't matter.
But there was something that did disturb me when I was out there, and it was on the, you know, at the rally after the first night. They asked a question for folks to raise their hands if they were registered to vote.
Mm.
And I'm just giving a rough estimate. The numbers may have been different because I took and I looked around real quick, and I wish that I had just stopped shooting because I was live on Facebook nearby the whole time, and my battery had just went dead, and I was looking for a place to recharge it. But I did a quick scan of just the section that I was in and looking, trying to get an idea. And as many people that was out there, it was not a majority that raised their hands and said they were registered to vote. And I talked about this again last week, and I'm going to keep talking about it till we make sure something happens. Now, I know that there were people from different organizations out there registering people to vote when after that went down. And I also seen members of the Democratic Party out there who were trying to get the commit card signed to commit the vote. And I seen other groups that was, I seen DSA out there, you know, talking about voting. And I seen them out there also trying to get, I also seen Green Party members out trying to get signatures for Jill Stein. So there was some back-end stuff going on there, but like you said, if you are out there in those streets and you are old enough and eligible to vote, you need to register and you need to vote. Nobody's saying which party you got to go vote for, but you need to sit down, figure out the issues, figure out which person is on that ballot best suits the issues for you, and go vote. Because if that is the case, because I was telling somebody once again, a couple of the Bernie delegates that were out there marching, that I've seen that as a problem, and I kind of came to a conclusion of why we didn't do as well as we did, because you looked at the rallies and stuff, the rallies said we should have won. But then you're now finding out that a lot of y'all went to the rallies and you didn't even register to vote. And you didn't even go take the time to go. If you're going to protest, and I know you think the system is rigged and this ain't the system is rigged, but you can't change it if you're not even willing to engage at least on the basic level of registering to vote. We needed you. We needed y'all to vote. You get to the thing, I guess you thought you were just going to be able to walk up in there and have some paperwork. Yeah, you're going to have to give the government your name and your address and all this other stuff. Yeah, you're going to have to do that. So, and I know some of these people that are in protest in the activist world are really kind of neo-anarchists, and you don't really want to put your, you don't want to go on grid, but you're going to have to come on grid for this fight. So,
and,
but,
you know, I mean, you're dead right on that. You know, we're seeing, like, act like Cori Bush down in Missouri go from protest to Congress. If you don't see anybody worth a damn voting for it, well, then maybe you need to run. That's part of the problem because, you know, there is a valid concern about there's nobody, you know, nobody represents you. If you're in that situation, then you need to start looking around or looking in the mirror and run your damn self because it's time we stop this madness. And this is the one part of the puzzle that we have never filled.
And if you go run, sit down and get some thought to it. Learn the rules of the road. Because you're going to be playing by the rules that have been set already. You can't change them until you get in office. So you got to be prepared to fight fire with fire while you're out there. So that means you got to be prepared
right.
to do what they do.
You got to know the game before you flip it.
Yeah,
you
got to
know the game.
To the voters. You got to be able to do all that stuff. Now, I had not talked to a couple of people about that. They was like, well, we're trying to get money out of politics. No, what we're trying to do is get corporate money out of politics. There's always going to be money there. But money is just a tool, and how we use it and where it comes from matters. So if you're a person that does not believe in corporate money being inside of politics, you run and you do it the way Bernie did it. You take over for the small donations. You go out there and talk to the regular people. You get them inspired to take and do that. And you have to be willing to lead that process on yourself and be the example. But you can't say, I'm gonna run a campaign without money. You shooting yourself in the foot and you're doing some stupid if you plan on doing that. But another thing, you know, we just now watching this as it's developing, this Baton Rouge shooting.
But I mean, you know what? There's not really much for me to say because you can't say we haven't seen this coming. But, you know, just like riots are the voice of the unheard, so are these gun bullets. And I'm by no means condoning the violence or advocating for it, but I can see where we've gotten to this place. And if we continue to ignore what's coming out, because I've had so many conversations with people on the road. I mean, while this is popping off and I'm sitting up there with my wild hair, you know, my Black Lives Matter button, and, you know, white people were coming up and having conversations with me on the road. This is when Dallas popped off. And, you know, I really didn't I mean, what do you want me to say? And some of the conversations that came out outwards, you know, I'm like looking at CNN and watching the TV screen on the road, and I was like, this is madness. You know, the same sentiments as being expressed by the police officers and their families are the exact same ones that millions of Black families have gone through and whose lives have, you know, you're not just taking a life, you're destroying a family. And it happens on both sides. So if we have compassion for these officers, why do we not have them for these families who, these people lost their lives not because they were doing something. One was reaching for his ID, okay?
Right.
You know, I mean, one was selling CDs in the parking lot. Come on, y'all. If we can't get past and see the humanity and the connectivity to both sides on this, we're never going to get this right. And to hear these conversations and to see in the aftermath, you know, how we're supposed to act right in front of the police. No, this is the wrong conversation we're having. The conversation should be, why do you keep shooting us? And if we don't have those conversations the same way, don't tell me and tell my kids how to act right. My kids don't know how to act right anymore because anything they do, they can get shot. I can get shot for it. So it's the wrong conversation we're having.
Like you said, nobody's condoning, or at least nobody who is sane is condoning, you know, fighting actively with the police. But let's be honest, there is a natural progression to certain situations. I mean, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. If throughout history, if you went after a certain group of people long enough, sooner or later they react. There's going to be an extreme, just like the extreme. That, we're not saying all policemen are bad. There's a small group of extremists who are doing what they're doing. And what they're going to do is aggravate the situation on the other side, and there's going to be a small group of extremists on the other side who are going to react. And just like the extremists on the police side are killing innocent people, then the extremists on the other side are going to go on the police side and kill innocent people. I mean, it ain't like the guys are going around, let's go find the cops that got the complaints on them that keep getting off and go pop them. Not advocating that. Let me say, not advocating that. Do not do it. Do not do it. But it's not like that's happening. Everybody's just trying to hurt everybody. And some people, but you know, like I was saying last week on the show, some people are just looking for a reason to act a fool on both sides. White supremacists and Black Power folks on both sides who both see a need for there to be a separation in the two groups are both looking for a fight. It's us in the middle, the moderates, the normal folk, who have to sit there and say, hold on, we got to have a conversation and neutralize those voices. Because if we don't, they're going to draw all of us into a conflict that we don't want to be in.
But I got to say, though, Amazing Grace ain't going to cut it. Ain't going to cut it this time. And these conversations, sitting down and telling me and my children and my family how to act, that ain't going to cut it either. So I'm really not trying to hear that from anybody. I don't give a damn who it is.
I think I'm ready to go in the
direction.
Let's see what she got to say here. Is this you, Miss No-No? Hello?
I muted myself. This is Anoa. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
Muted yourself. Hey.
Yeah, I muted on my phone.
Okay.
But anyway, how are you guys doing? There's so much going on.
Yeah, it is. It is. So we were just sitting here talking about Baton Rouge. Now, on what's going on. Has the Twitterverse blown up yet?
Twitter's
ridiculous.
Twitter's been blown up, man.
Social media is absolutely insane. But let's just a brief recap from this week, because now we have this Baton Rouge incident to add into it. And let's just also be clear, it's not clear exactly if this is just like what exactly has gone on, if this was like a targeted incident yet. They don't really have much facts except for what has, you know, that there are three cops that have been dead, there are a few others that are injured, and there's one suspect allegedly dead. They're saying there's possibly two more suspects at large. We don't know exactly what this is, who the suspects are, or why, so everyone rushing to judge, just like the Michigan, there was an incident where two cops were killed in a courthouse in Michigan last week, which no one is talking about. That person, the shooter in that case, was white. So we needed everything, just because a cop gets shot, everything is not now all of a sudden because of something that's going on within the Black Lives Matter movement. And we need to really just be chill. And on the flip side, we need to stop rushing to apologize automatically for stuff. Like, nothing we've done or said is because, you know, that this is not because of us. So we don't need to go all these overtures to make sure people know that we're the good Black folks. We need to stop doing that. Because it also, and I really do applaud folks who last week spent a lot of time refocusing the messaging back on the issues that they're actually working to address. It is unfortunate when things like this happen, but we don't even then spend all of our energy denouncing, you know, things like that. I mean, it's a given. Like, you shouldn't have to do that. But
the thing I think some of us are getting at is that, like, for instance, people like us who are speaking out, who got an audience, who have voices, we have to be careful to not seem like, because, like, for instance, we have to say we're not condoning that you go do this. Because then somebody will come back and say, well, Scott states in Illinois said, let's go kill police officers. No, we didn't say that. So, yeah.
Well, no, I understand, like, in our position, like, you make your disclaimer up front. But what I'm saying is there are a lot of people, organizational leadership, across the board, we're talking about social media, people putting out messages and statements, not only denouncing but over-explaining. That's unnecessary because no one else does that. You know, we got cops killing Black folks all the time. Nobody's denouncing, apologizing. Nobody else does that when something goes wrong. Or, you know, we need to stop lumping everybody in together. Right. It totally distracts away from our movement and our work. So, like I said, Twitter, I mean, it's been a lot of tension. You know, there have been a lot of attempts to pacify people, that people will, you know, go home and be good darkies. But I'm going to tell y'all, my prediction from the way things are going to continue to rise and be hot on social media. You know, a lot of people were not happy with President Obama's attempt at a racial town hall with ABC this week. Today is actually the second, and it's been 2 years since Eric Garner was killed in Staten Island. And there's an event this evening, and, you know, Eric Garner has taken to Twitter, and she's done a couple different interviews, and she has some other stuff coming out, talking about her disappointment with the ABC town hall specifically. Tamir Rice's mother actually did an interview recently as well where she talks about how she's disappointed with President Obama. And Joy Reid's page tweeted out a clip from where she talks about her disappointment. And, of course, you know, Twitter, the Obama apologists are dragging her for it, but we got to respect that woman and her and what she's going through. Same with Erica. People may not like, you know, Erica's approach to the situation that happened, but at the same time, people need to be heard. And I think that, what is it, the hashtag was Loud Black Girls or Loud Black Women or something like, something to that effect was the hashtag this week started by Feminista Jones, which is very interesting. That's a whole other story, that she's the one that started it. But we have to stop silencing people to make other folks, the majority, feel comfortable. We cannot be afraid to actually continue to speak up and call things out. Yes, President Obama is the president, the GOP is attacked him, but that does not take away from the fact that his language and use of his position, and particularly his seemingly positioning himself as a member of the Black community with a Black experience that relates to the struggle that people are talking about, at the same time trying to silence change and voices, is highly problematic, and he absolutely does need to be called out, as do other people who ascribe to his way of doing things. For President Obama to use his position to give strength to the Blue Lives Matter movement by calling killings of police officers a hate crime, that is a highly problematic issue that people are trying to counter in their communities, that he is giving to couch things in terms of we all need to just understand and respect and have trust in each other when we're not even on the same level, equal playing field. You know, I'm sorry that the president has that experience of getting in the elevator with an older white woman who should have known him as a child, and she was scared and got off. Okay, yeah, great, okay. Like, you have a common experience from when you're a child, but you're sitting there in a position of power and authority, and you actually have the opportunity to have a real meaningful conversation on race. And we got to sit here and look at people like the mother of the cop who killed Walter Scott as if we're all suffering the same. Nah, I'm not. So as we're sitting here today, again, individual people, you know, individual, like cop killings, it's not a good thing. You know, death is never a good thing. It's not a good thing at all. But we need to be mindful of the entire system as a whole, and we need to continue to have these conversations. What's happening right now is unfortunate. Whoever in their misguided attempts think they're doing whatever they're doing, whether it's just people in petty crimes or people who are really actually upset about the government, you're not helping anything. Like, you're really not. Like, this don't help nothing. This just makes our work a lot harder. So social media is crazy, and then everybody needs to watch out for the racist trolls, because apparently there are racist trolls who follow all of us. I didn't realize there was one following me until this morning. We were talking about you black thugs need to get your act together. I look at his profile, and it's like, follows you. I said, okay, so you follow me. So people will follow us, you know, to hassle and haggle and attack. So it's a lot going on. You know, Bernie Sanders winded things down, and the Bernie Nation has kind of gone a little crazy. There are those who are like, y'all need to chill out. You know, there's no reason to jump ship. Just chillax. There are others who are calling his actions treasonous and all other types of stuff. They've denounced him. They're all Team Jill. Like, instantly, like, after Bernie Sanders, because there are people who didn't want to believe that that's what he was about to do, right? I mean, I know I've said it. Stacey's been saying it. Scout said it. We've all said it forever, that people needed, what are you going to do? You need to transition to figure out where you're going to be and how you're going to position yourself when he does endorse her, because he's going to do it. He's not going to be independent, go back to being independent. He has said, I'm like, do you people listen to the words he himself says out of his own mouth? Right? It's not disingenuous. He has done what he said he was always going to do. And he got concessions that he felt were beneficial for him. I feel like he got a bunch of crap and some stuff that's not really meaningful. You know, now the biggest thing is that Hillary Clinton has pledged to introduce a constitutional amendment to end Citizens United. That's cute. Within the first 30 days of the administration. That's really cute, considering one of the issues with her is FEC versus McCutcheon versus FEC, which has which eliminated the aggregate limits for donations, which she is the primary benefactor of a lot of the exploitations and loopholes of all these rules, not even the GOP candidates, Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee. So that now that they're the ones that are going to somehow save us from the big bad evils of campaign finance reform, I mean, Twitter, like I said, Twitter is all over the place, and we have to be able to be multifaceted. You know, so people are upset with Bernie Sanders, and immediately several pages, accounts all of a sudden turned to Jill Stein and Green Party. You know, Jill Stein had a surge in donations, volunteers, which is great for the Green Party. I really do hope that they have a plan to actively channel and use that energy. So there's a lot of great energy and a lot of hardworking people and a lot of opportunity there, so hopefully that's not mismanaged in any way. I'm not saying that it will be, but hopefully there's a plan, because no one seems to be able to answer that question about what they're going to do with all this surge, but besides try to win, that's a whole other story. But yeah, social media is wild, and this Baton Rouge thing. I mean, the problem, we got to be careful about this 24-hour news cycle. People are jumping and drawing conclusions on information as it comes out, and we really need to get in the habit of, you know, not being in such a rush to apologize for stuff that may not even have anything to do with us. So that's the social media rundown for this past week. I mean, it's a lot going on. People are shifting gears. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, some of the big organizations that supported Bernie are now going to Jill Stein, or they're falling in line with the Democratic, you know, National Convention whole lineup. Others are staying the course and staying neutral, so to speak, right?
Yep.
So there's still work that has to be done.
There's a lot of that has been seen. A lot of people have been trying to criticize delegates, that Bernie delegates, but a lot of people fail to realize that for those delegates to be able to do anything, they got to be very careful about what they're doing up until the convention.
They do.
Because they're saying that they're Democrats, at least until the convention is over with, so they can't be going out and talking about we're going to jump ship, because they will lose their credentials. So
that's the concern about credential challenges and things like that, too. So we need to just chill out. It's not life or death. It's not even, you know, the Green Party, they haven't even had their convention yet. Their convention is not until after the Dem convention, right? Their convention is not until August, the first week of August. So there's no need to rush. There's no need to throw down your gauntlet and declare loyalty at this moment. Like, relax. One thing I do keep saying, because this is what I keep saying myself, I have not completely been entirely bought into this notion that we have to go green. I'm not necessarily someone that believes I need a party to do the work that needs to be done. And there's no diss to anyone who does feel that way. But at the same time, we're a very valuable voting block right now. We've done a lot in the last 15 months. Why are you just handing over your time, your access, your influence to anyone? Doesn't matter who it is. Without any clear understanding of what you're getting in return. When we get a party home, why do you need a party home, though? Like, just think about what the work that we need to do entails. And does having a party home, does that, when you're talking about legislation and stuff, does it actually help you when you have a party that does not even really have the legislative influence to help do what you need to do? So we really do just need to really think about what we're trying to accomplish. Again, not discouraging anyone from staying Dem, from going green, from starting a new party, but we need to think and be critical about what is going on, what the next steps are, and how we're spending our time, energy, and money.
I think people need to really think about where they want to create change, because for those who examine it and the political world is not for them, then they do not need a political home. But for a lot of the remedies that do require a political situation, that require a political remedy, you will need a political home to do that. The question is, particularly for Black people, whether it's any of the parties that exist are going to be the ones, because no matter what, the work is going to be no different. What the Democrats need are the same thing that the Green Party needs, that any other party needs, or a brand new party. The question is whether or not we should do this for, and I'm speaking in terms of the Black community, whether or not any party can effectively do that, or do we need to create one of our own? And this would we've got a small window of opportunity to start doing that and getting it together, because we can't sit around and ask, nor can we wait for something that doesn't exist to appear. So if we're going to do that, we got to build it.
Absolutely agree. And only to piggyback on that, I was just going to say, the last thing I was going to say that happened this week, though, social media was, you know, we had the big thing. Well, it might have been between last week and this week about, you know, reports about, like, what happens with, you know, Bernie's African-American outreach team, what happens with Bernie's Latino outreach team. And there seems to be an echoing, regardless of whether you agree exactly with statements and stuff made, that there wasn't enough diversity at the top in terms of decision-making within the campaign. You know, Stacey and I, Scout and I, all of us, Stacey and Scout, Stacey and Scout in particular have so much more institutional knowledge than I do on this topic. So, you know, folks have been saying similar things, though, about, you know, the reluctance to listen. But we have a problem when we go forward. We're talking about this progressive movement and what's next, whether we're, again, like Stacey said, starting a new party, we're working with an existing party. We really do need to address the issue of diversity, outreach, engagement, and how we interact with certain populations, because we're going to continue to repeat various mistakes that were highlighted by this campaign cycle. So we We need to be critical. We need to be thinking about these issues. We can't just say, oh, we're all in this together no matter what. Let's just do this work. No, we do need to take a step back and think about what works and what doesn't. So
yeah,
that's my problem today.
We appreciate that. And institutionally, you're right, because we've all seen campaigns. We can look at organizations, particularly those that are progressive in nature, how you see black folks and people of color doing the work, but you don't always see them making the decisions. And they think because we're doing the work, but then we're doing the work based on decisions made by people who don't necessarily know the experience, you know.
They don't have a cool scout.
Yeah, they don't. And, you know, and that's even when coming to you, when even for African-American campaigns, when we're running campaigns that have areas in our districts that have white people in it, we don't even truly go in there and campaign to them because we don't even understand how to diversify our groups. It's everybody for themselves. Even when we have multicultural diverse districts, we only tend to campaign to those who look like us and believe like we do. And then you find out that you have people that not necessarily supporting you. It's not because they didn't want to. You never went out there to try to garner their support to begin with. That is something that is very important that everybody needs to understand, is that once you decide you're going to run for office, at the end of the day, if you win, you represent everybody in your district. So you need to be doing outreach to everybody so that you can understand your constituency. So, but,
okay, but that's the way it's supposed to be done. But you and I
right,
both
supposed
know.
To be done.
But wait, hold up. But the way it's actually been done and how most politicians are taught, you know, unofficially, you go to where the voters are. So you go to your districts where you know the voters are. You don't bother with the people who don't know.
But
so
sometimes
the people
it ain't
who are complaining.
Because it's like, for instance, I'm going to use DeKalb County as an example. As you move up toward around the Stone Mountain area, you have very big populations. You have large concentrations of whites, blacks, Asians, Latinos, and even immigrants in the same area. You don't see, and the white population votes. They are actually, majority of them, since we're talking party politics here, and the DeKalb County is majority Democratic, these are Democratic white voters who don't always feel that they're being represented by the African Americans that are in office because they just don't reach out to them sometimes. Now, there are some who have, and I know that they do, and then, you know, I'm always singing the praises of Doreen Carter because she reaches out to everybody in her district regardless of color or even political affiliation. She's now an elected official. She needs to talk to you. But everybody doesn't do that. And so you have some people who actually try to play the game of isolating this group of people to show they're stronger to the race that they belong to, or the ethnic group that they belong to. And that's a very dangerous thing over time because the people who may will support you to begin with, they're voters, they believe ideologically the way you believe, but then they become your enemies because you never, ever sought to parlay with them. Now, this is a perfect segue because we've been talking about the GOP, and we know they do a lackluster-ass job. And
they're funny. They're really funny.
Yes, it's funny because we know that Democrat, you know, the Republican convention is getting ready to take place next week, and it's going to be a comedy show that is going to probably reap benefits for our laughter for the next at least 6-7 weeks, because they're coming. Because that's, you know, until it maybe even until the election, but. The funniest thing that came out, me and I understand they're reworking the logo. You see the new Trump TP, and everybody's like, you see all the memes that have jumped out, TP for your bunghole. If you want to flush it, you need toilet paper, TP. I mean, really, did anybody think about that, TP? It's like, really, what you put shit on, TP? I mean, really?
Maybe it was intentional. I don't know.
With Trump, you never know. But that was the first thing. And speaking about Mike Pence, you know, everybody was like, okay, why did Trump pick Mike Pence? He's supposed to be a
violent. Why is everybody acting new about that? Wait, why is everyone acting new about Pence? You know this guy.
This guy ain't
nothing new or surprising about him, but he is a curious choice because he's kind of monument of hypocrisy walking around there.
So this is kind of
interesting. And here in Georgia, we saw conservatives, they were kind of cool to him being picked because of some of the choices he has made as governor of Indiana.
Here in Georgia, I think what was going on with Georgia conservatives, they really wanted Newt Gingrich to be it. Because they did.
That's just too much ego on the stage. You knew that wasn't going to happen.
Because, see, the South has been in
enough. There's not enough air for Trump and Gingrich.
Yeah, so, you know, but the South has been ignored by the Republican Party. All of their choices for national office for a while now. And, see, the thing is, Southern conservatives are a little bit pissed about that. Because the Republican Party and the conservative movement would not have the strength they have if it wasn't for the Southern strategy. If it wasn't for the fact that they were able to get all of these good old boys down here to switch parties from being Democrats to Republicans and push that Republican agenda through the South, they wouldn't have the power that they have because they have always coveted the solid South. Now then, the South still ain't getting no reward with leadership from that. I mean, think about it. You look at, let me explain this.
Yeah, because we saw Tom Price tried to go for it.
Right. Now, let's say this. Let me clarify this. Even though Texas is considered a Southern state, the rest of us will tell you that's Texas. That is Texas. What that commercial say is like a whole another country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when we say the South, I'm not necessarily talking about Texas. I'm talking about places like Mississippi. Because Louisiana is a little different. Okay? But I'm talking about Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Southern Virginia. We ain't even talking about Northern Virginia. We talking about Southern Virginia. Florida doesn't even count into this because Florida is a whole other animal in the South itself. Now, you might be throwing an Arkansas and some of Missouri in that, but when we talk the South, we're talking about the dirty. The dirty, dirty. You know, we talking about, like I said, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee. Now, there have been no major figures come out of the Republican Party that comes out of the South. But they come down through here, they raise their money, they push their talking points heavier down here than they do anywhere else. But then every time they pick their national ticket, it's a Yankee, a Westerner, or a Midwesterner. And then you took that crazy woman from out of Alaska and brought her through the game last time.
I'm glad you didn't say her name. The former
I refuse to give her any press at all, but we all know who she is.
Thank you.
But you have this coming, you know, you look at what Paul Ryan, North Midwesterner. The only Southerner that had an actual chance of being VP was Newt Gingrich, and we still can't get the second seat in the White House, really, really. I mean, Hillary, listen. You might want to take and play that to your advantage, but you won't. You know, it ain't gonna work for the Democrats in the same way because the South is not gonna generate nothing for her either. We're so polarized here that really trying to use a Southern ticket holder of second place on the ticket is not going to do anything for either party because it's not going to swing anything.
But wait. Our elected officials are polarized, and that polarization, now that trickled down to the electorate. But when you actually talk to the people, we're not as polarized as our elected officials are.
Right, you're right. But we're still talking about this. But when we're talking about this from the aspect of, you know, because usually you try to use your vice presidential pick to be somebody that can swing you in certain states. Because, see, a Midwesterner is good because if somebody holds so-called Midwestern values, this, that, and other, there's some swing states in the Midwest. Having somebody that they can relate to is good. You couldn't pull a Southerner and on either side, and it's going to be a swing for them. Because, one, the Republicans know the South is solid. Democrats know the South is solid. There's nothing for nobody to have to do to play in the South. We always talk about we got the best thing you got swinging in the South is North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's it. That is it. The rest of it is they you know, we hear about Georgia's now leaning Republican versus it being solid Republican, but it's still leaning. If I chop that tree, it's going to fall that direction.
Okay. And, you know, we hear that in Georgia every election. Like they said it in 10, they said it in 12, they said it in 14, and it pops up like a nasty recurring virus in 16.
Yeah, but there's some numbers surging with that might give them some hope. But at the same time, for that to take place, for that to be a swing in Georgia, either way, other than what it
is. The only thing that surges is the money. That's the only thing.
The Democrats are going to be trying to make us a swing state, and the Republicans are going to be trying to stop that. So there's going to be a lot of money spent down here. That's what's going to make Georgia a battleground, because it's going to be a spending spree to try to hold ground.
But it ain't going to be no battleground. Because we know this is going to end up with 10 states electing the president of the United States, and Georgia ain't going to
be one of them. No, it's not. But, you know, I've been looking at, you know, but going back to Mike Pence, I've been looking at his record of what he believes in. And now, if he was supposed to balance Trump out, I don't know what the hell the balance was, where that balancing point is supposed to be, because other than the fact that he might be more establishment than anybody else, because the guy reeks and smells, he smells like the Republican Party. He has, you know, all of the trappings of this establishment candidate. Now, he's a former talk show host. Now he called himself the Rush Limbaugh on decaf. So, okay, coffee to me, and I understand the difference between decaffeinated and caffeinated, but coffee's still coffee. So if you say claiming you anything like Rush Limbaugh, what you basically saying, I think like him, I just didn't say it all the time. And so the thing is that, like, for instance, let's go, abortion. He began seeking to defend Planned Parenthood back in 2007. He was looking at getting taken away and preventing any organization that provides abortion service from receiving Title X funding. You know, now that's like Republican 101. You get no more establishment than that. I think he's further to right than Trump is on that situation. Then we come to this next thing that they had on the list for him was birthright citizenship. He's in opposition to birthright citizenship, which is a thing that is set up by the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment. I mean, it's constitutional. And he co-sponsored a bill that would have limited citizenship to children born to at least one parent who was a citizen. You can do that already. okay, if you were born outside of the country, you still got your citizenship and you were born to one parent. Immigrants living permanently in the United States, okay, that was already there. And non-citizens performing active service, okay, most of what you're saying, you're saying you're opposing it, but you only thing different is that if I was an undocumented person in the United States, then my child cannot automatically become a citizen, which that is the greatest thing about being an American, is that you breathe the air here. You your first breath was taken here. You're one of us. We accept everybody.
Yeah, but Pence is just keeping in line with the actual GOP platform because last week, Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach, love the man. If you've been purged from the voting rolls here in Georgia and the South, chances are it's because of your state following his initiative, the Interstate Cross-Check Program. But anyway, him and another delegate, Amy Carnevale, they petitioned to put stronger language in the party platform to have that wall. That's a thing, okay? That's a real thing. And when Trump says it, he means it. The crowd goes wild. And apparently the GOP loves it because they put it in the platform saying that border security is the highest of priorities. That is why we support a wall along our southern border and protect if all points of entry. The border wall must cover the entirety of the southern border. It must be sufficient to stop both vehicular and pedestrian traffic. So, Trump,
they ain't planning on being
perfect. They're perfect. They're in line with the platform. And we do know that, unlike the Democrats, the GOP does march in line with the platform.
And then when you look at his drug stance, normal gave him a -20 score, which means he's hard on drug stance, which, that means he's going to be, he's probably this prosecuting the war on drugs. Oh, he's probably going to be heavy on that one. So we're going to have to watch him because war on drugs equals what to us in the African-American community? That's one of the problems we have. You're going, there's police brutality and militarization of the police, which makes the police an occupying force in our communities other than being there to protect and serve. No, we can't just do no. He's banned.
So Pence ain't going to free the weed, people. He ain't going to free the weed.
No. Economics. He is big on going back to this gold standard stuff. He's a proponent of a federal flat tax. He was opposed to the TARP in 2008, and he voted against the minimum wage being raised to $7.25 from $5.15. So he definitely ain't a fight for 15 guy, because he just wanted to go from $5.15 to $7.25.
Said, what's wrong with him? He's perfect. He's right in line with them.
But for the rest of us, he sucks. He voted against No Child Left Behind, which I don't know how I feel about that one on that. Yeah, so I'm going to let him have that one.
We feel some type of way about it.
Yeah, No Child Left Behind, so yeah. Because there's so many issues that take place in inner city schools and in rural schools that deal with this No Child Left Behind deal that, he voted against it. That might have been something good that he might have did. But Pence also he's a part of earmark reform. But we all know he's a Tea Party guy. So anytime the government wants to spend any money, he's against it. Now, my point is everybody, line items, everything, that money has to be, quote, unquote, earmarked to go into the district to be spent on certain things, because that is the whole reason you send your representatives up there, is to represent the good of your district. So if money's going to be spent, you want your representatives to bring some of those federal dollars that your tax money is going into to come back into your district, if there's going to be any federal projects. that creates jobs and that. So yeah, he kind of he flaky on that one. I don't know if I want him on that one. But then we talk about energy policy.
But let's go back to his whole Tea Party fiscal conservancy, right? Mm-hmm. Conservancy. Now, this is a man who embraced Obamacare and expanded it in Indiana. So
yeah, but He took the money.
He did put some strings on it, but he took that money.
There's some serious-ass strings on his Medicaid expansion. Like, for instance,
why do they enjoy it that way? Because it's a block grant, right?
Right.
Republicans love block grants because they basically get to do whatever they want with the money. Once it gets to,
right.
you know, and you'll hear, like, states' rights a lot. That's why, so they can get their hands on them dollars and all they have to do is say what they're going to do with it. But what actually happens to that money is not actually what happens. So I got to call BS on Pence on that. But I just wanted to bring that up.
One of the strings that he did attach is that unlike in other places where, you know, ACA was supposed to guarantee that people had health care. Well, he linked the co-payments very tightly to his Medicaid expansion. So they have co-pays that are sliding scales based on pre-existing conditions and health habits, behaviors. So if you wanted to quit smoking, you can get a lower co-pay. If you went to the gym, you get a lower co-pay. You know, all of these different types of things. But you can also lose your benefits for those exact same reasons under the Medicaid expansion program in Indiana. So, he got some good strings attached to his that pretty much made it, you know, it sounded good, like, oh, he accepted Medicaid expansion, but in actuality, what he did was, you know, just got the money. And I'm sure somebody's getting paid very well as an appointee for administering that program in Indiana because that's what they do.
We get talking about
energy and climate change with Mike Pence. He's for offshore drilling. He wanted to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to drilling. And that was back in 2007 when he voted for that. And he also is one of those people that believes that global warming is a myth. He doesn't believe in it. And he's fought every bill that has come up that has attempted to address this situation in some form or another. In 2009, he said to Chris Matthews that there was growing skepticism, quote unquote, growing skepticism in the scientific community about global warming. So, you know, he's a skeptic on that, and, you know, we see the changes every day, and he just hadn't caught on to that just yet. Him and evolution. I'm going to leave y'all. Yeah, okay. Now, I believe that, you know, God created heaven and earth, but I also, you know, I ain't going to sit there and say that the earth was created 5,000 years ago. I mean, but Mike Pence believes this.
Pence is perfect.
Yeah,
You've got the dynamic of those conservatives. I mean, even though you've got a very large number, I believe he's upside down. In terms of conservatives who want Trump as a nominee, you know, just like on the Democratic side where, you know, but Trump, you know, they're saying, yeah, we're not crazy about Trump, but it's Clinton. So you've got one part of that base that's going to come out just because they're anti-Clinton. And then you've got, you know, Pence to bring in that other element of the GOP that has basically brought them into power and giving them a nod. You know, that, you know.
Here's the big difference.
But, I mean, Pence to me is perfect. He's a perfect complement to Trump. And I'm just like, okay.
But this area is different from Trump and it comes down to trade. Now, we all know that Trump is not a big fan of global trade agreements and the way they
that's
do it. He doesn't like that.
That's what he says, but he makes a nice little profit off of trade. So what Trump says and what he does in business are two different things.
But see, this guy here, Pence, is basically, you know, he's ready for them to get in there so they can go ahead and run through. If Obama can't get TPP through there, he's basically saying, hey, we the team that's going to make it happen. We're going to make it. If it can't get done before he leaves office, we're going to make sure it happens. And he's also against the Trade and Globalization Act of 2007, which made for adjustments to try to deal with the fact that there were workers being exploited overseas by the attempt to raise their wages to a comparable level to what their counterparts in developed nations were making. And another thing that I was noticing, that this came out of the Republican platform, there's this thing in which when you have government, it's called the preferred wage or something of that nature, that when you have a government contract, such as construction or something of that nature, when you're building something for the government, it keeps them from bidding too low because they have to pay. There's a guaranteed rate they got to pay their workers. So they're saying in the Republican Party that this is anti-free market because they can't bid. They can't force the bids any lower than to a certain floor, and companies should be able to go in there and bid lower than that to be able to save costs and be able to eventually save the taxpayer money. But what they will end up doing is, you know, hiring workers and basically effectively could pay them minimum wage to do something, which, yeah, effectively that would increase the profits for the organization doing the work under the guise of saving the taxpayer money. And our LGBT brothers and sisters are not going to like Pence because he was opposed to same-sex marriages and civil unions. And he voted against the Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2009. He was against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he thinks that the President Obama taking things the way he did in the military was advancing a radical social agenda. And that he's a big riffer guy. I mean, so you look at this guy, he is the poster child for Republican craziness.
Yeah,
he's the poster child for Republican crazy.
This is not, you and I know conservatives in Georgia. You know that this is not the best that the party has to offer.
No, there's a lot better people that they could have.
But that can be said about both sides.
Yeah, there's people on this side, because, like, for instance, in Georgia, if I had to pick any conservative in the state of Georgia to become an elected official and I could be okay with it, let me put this disclaimer out there. This is not an official endorsement, but this guy is my friend. But it would be the 3rd Congressional District Chairman, Dale Jackson. And he's the guy who's been fighting he's been the forefront for the cannabis oil and getting it cultivated here in Georgia to try to treat some of these illnesses that we got. And he has been championing it. But past all of that, I served my time as chairman of the Democratic Party in Troup County during the beginning of his tenure as the chairman down there, of the Republicans. This guy still cares about regular people. He's a fiscal conservative. He believes in his God. He believes in God. But he also believes in making sure people don't suffer. That if you were going to have a conservative in power somewhere, he would be the guy, because I've never seen him make a decision that people were going to suffer behind. He ain't with that, because he said that isn't who God led him to be. but he still believes in fiscal conservatism. He believes that people should be able to make, and you know, a lot of that sounds good if we knew that the people above him were not using stuff like states' rights and individual rights and all of this stuff to put their foot in the back of other people's neck. I believe most people would be okay with that if it wasn't going to cause any type of discrimination. And that's the point. If you read through the Republican platform, it all sounds good in language of the title, but when you get down to it, you see discrimination somewhere. You see exploitation. Just go and look. I'm looking at it now, of the main areas of the GOP platform. You got their preamble, which is a bunch of, you know, I'm not going to read it, but it's a bunch of, you know, the same diatribe we used to hear from them. Then you have Section 2, which is called Restoring the American Dream. And it basically goes through talking about job creation, getting Americans back to work, small business and entrepreneurship, tax relief to grow the economy, American competitiveness in the global economy, fundamental tax principles, reining in out-of-control spending, balancing the budget, and ensuring sound monetary policy. Balancing the budget, inflation and the Federal Reserve. Now, this one here will probably, the next two that I'm talking about will probably, people in my community could probably get with, but until you read where it goes down, until you probably learn, it says ending the housing crisis and expanding opportunities for home ownership, and then the next line item is rebuilding home ownership. Oh, and then you got one, two down from it, more American jobs, higher wages, and a better standard of living. Now, if you listen to that, you'd be like, wow, I'm all for that. But then you go in there and read what the hell they really talking about. Now, you go in here, they talking about making sure that the government can't back loan federal loans again, and you know, some old, there's all kinds of stuff that they're here talking about that basically would bolster the housing construction business, but not necessarily put us in a better position to buy homes again. And everything is a free market situation that doesn't put us back in homes again. I mean, they think that just because we get rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which, yeah, they have some problems, that everything automatically just balanced itself out. It never balanced itself out. It was federal programs that allowed the American people to get to the highest levels of home ownership that they did. So their plan really just makes the rich folks some more money. And then when you get to talking about higher wages, the first thing I've seen is, so do they have a plan to raise the minimum wage? No, they don't. They think that if we spur free market competition, that it will bring more jobs back to the American shores, and those jobs will be higher paying. But you're putting free trade agreements in place that are going to suck jobs out of the country, because they can pay people less, but you think for some reason by doing this that this is going to force jobs back to America and they're going to pay us a higher wage. How in the hell do they think this?
But you're hurting actually the job creators that, small businesses. You're hurting small American businesses, and a lot of those businesses are often started out by immigrants. So,
right.
I mean, but we're looking at the platform, and there's really nothing surprising that's in there
no.
We haven't heard come out of Republican elected officials and candidates' mouths.
But I think one of
the bigger stories was how democracy was crushed. We're looking at both the Democrats and Republicans getting ready for their conventions, and it has been contentious on the Democratic side with the Bernie Sanders political insurgency, right? And, you know, we have the wailing and moaning and gnashing of teeth after his announcement that he was endorsing Hillary Clinton. I was kind of looking at the GOP side with a little bit of envy as to how they were conducting it, until this week. They have done a better job to try to keep their party unified, and, you know, they are respecting the decision whether we like it or not. They're allowing the people's choice, which is Trump, whether the pundits or the very serious people like it. That is exactly how democracy works, and shame on anyone who, would think about blowing that up. However, we saw that try to happen with the Rules Committee and the DNC and the RNC fighting back, because I think it was the Hail Mary with the conscience clause that would have allowed delegates to vote for the candidate of their choice instead of being bound. That got blown up by the Rules Committee, and they're stuck with Trump. So those who are not happy with Trump, just like in the DNC, but the same with the Bernie delegates, the Trump the anti-Trump people have been silent. And if that is such a significant block, and as Ron Spreber said, not one of my favorite people, but he said this morning on This Week, they had no alternative candidate to step up. They had no plan. They just wanted Trump out. So you've got that dynamic working, but you kind of saw democracy get squashed and not let it play out. And they're doing the same things that Democrats are doing. But Democrats will see something that goes on the Republican side and kind of be silently or thankful about what's going on. They want somebody to come out and squash Trump. But when it happens on their side, then all of a sudden they're little kids in the room. It's just really, really amazing to watch these dynamics go back and forth between the two parties. But I thought that was the most interesting story that came out about the RNC convention that nobody's talking about. We saw this with the Ron Paul insurgency that happened the last presidential cycle, and we're seeing it now. So whether it's Republican or Democratic, when the voice of the people do stand up, whether we agree with them or not, it gets squashed out, and which causes this populist revolt that's going on both sides.
Right. A lot of people don't realize that is happening on both sides, is that the people, the true believers on both sides, are kind of upset on both sides. Now, and that's one of the things that I think a lot of folks don't understand, is that we have this one thing that is in common on both sides of the political spectrum, is this disappointment with how things is running politically in our country. Because to be honest with you, if you pull race out of the situation, which in America is very, very almost impossible to do, but if you were able to extract race from the situation, you would find everybody's pissed off about the same damn thing. Republicans and conservatives, libertarians, are all pissed off about government overreach. They're pissed off about not having their rights respected. They feel like their freedoms are being restricted. Folks on the left feel like there's government overreach. They feel like that their freedoms are being restricted. But what gets everybody blind, that we're all the same thing, comes down to not necessarily race, but things that are divisive between us, either race or orientation. If the other person that does not look like you or does not think like you or doesn't sleep with the same type of people you sleep with for something, then you're automatically against it. Because there are some things that I've heard that make sense on both sides, but we automatically go, "No, you're doing that because the Republicans said it or the Democrats said it." And it's just crazy, because neither one of us like the police. except for those who, you know, who ain't never put a uniform on, that are worshiping everything that wears a flag on his shoulder. Now, they, you know, and they don't understand until it happens to them, and then they talk about their constitutional rights. Now, realizing that a young black man, Latino man, or a poor white man even, is getting shot down in the streets, his constitutional rights are being violated.
No, we can't talk about that. No, you have your rights.
Yeah.
You have your rights to get shot.
Right. They don't want to talk about that. We don't, you know, you will see conservatives post that video about that fireman getting arrested on the scene out in California, I think it was, California, Arizona, and they all up in uproar. But then at the same time, us blocking the street here, they want to run us over. Oh, and then at the running over part, they are perfectly thinking it's the most horrific thing in the world that a terrorist ran through a crowd with a truck, but you were ready to do the same damn thing to us on 85 last week.
But wait. They just, Mayor of Cleveland just asked about the, he's asking for the open carry laws to be suspended during the convention. So, kind of ironic. And I told you, Scott,
yeah,
about
you,
them
you
damn rights. I keep telling y'all about this damn Constitution and black people. It was never meant for you. And if you do, if you still believe it is, look at what happened to Philando Castile. He had an open carry license. He was reaching for his ID. Where's the NRA? Where's the open carry group? Where's all your libertarians now talking about this
I'm gonna play devil's advocate here now, because I see I got some of them cats that peruse my page on a regular basis.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, got them. Yeah, and you know, I will probably have to do a show about that for them to call in, because I know they listen. But a lot of them actually was asking that exact same question. Where the NRA? Because this is what we, because they was like, whoa, this guy, because they couldn't say shit about that. This guy was what you supposed to do, and he still ended up dead. So what the hell is with this? But they couldn't get no traction because folks was hushing them up. And then this is how the right went to shut them down. That's when the accusation came up that he was a robbery suspect from earlier in the day. That's how they was able to silence that. But then it came to conclusion after we heard the tape of the dispatch was, hey, this guy's nose looks just like, it's wide just like the nose of that guy who robbed that convenience store. That was it. He had a wide nose. I don't know how many black folks you know out of 10 got wide noses. It's like 8, 9 out of 10. You know, some of us got pointy noses. But for the most part,
we born suspects. I mean, it doesn't even matter the nose.
No.
It's the color.
And, that was the excuse that was given by the right to hush that argument down.
Excuses are like duties. Everybody got one.
He was a violent criminal. But then that got debunked, and it was like, thank you. And I know somebody somewhere, and this is what comes down when you listen to your conspiracy theorists, that Dallas was a false flag operation to redirect that energy. Now, I ain't going to tell you no lie. I find it interesting that when you have these particular situations like that, that the shooter is always former military.
Yeah, and they trained him well.
You know, but then everybody goes, he was just a carpenter. But we all know, all of us who've ever put on this uniform or been around people or been married to the service or whatever, we all know that every last one of us had some type of weapons training, okay? That's just part of the game. And particularly if you're getting deployed to a hot spot, you definitely had weapons training. And your weapons training was performed in such a manner that if somebody came into your sights, they died. The police, not so much. I'm figuring that's probably going to change here because they're going to teach them to do a little bit better about their shooting so they can do it a little bit farther away, maybe out of the sight, out of visual range of cameras because cameras are getting their asses in trouble. But, you know, it always gets me, though. Anytime we have one of these operations like did the guys, a former military guy, Timothy McVeigh, former military. You always get me the former military guys who do this. Hell, the guy that did the shooting around D.C. was former military. You know, but then, but then they become some type of lone wolf, deranged person that was not well liked in the military. We'll never know because them records got scrubbed because this guy was a Manchurian candidate from the get-go. He was the guy, he was a sleeper from the get-go. They just found something to trigger him on. I mean, so that's just, and that conspiracy theory kind of had some weight with me because it was just so perfect. It was so perfect that he was able to do what he did. And then the fact that they went in there with a bomb made sure there wasn't going to be no leftovers. And all we got is what they say he said. And then if you listen to Baton Rouge today, if you was listening to the app, they sent a robot in to go check this guy out. They don't got a whole shit. We're using a robot.
And he's not apologizing. But you know, going back to the convention, okay, so, you know, you were all 10 feet tall and bulletproof about going forward, but now you get up to Cleveland, now you scared?
Yeah, because you scared because you done created a monster that, well, they got some folks they know crazy. They know they crazy. You know,
I don't think they know how crazy some of us actually are. So,
you know,
I really
don't. It reminded me of a Star Trek episode that I just watched yesterday. And, you know, Gene Roddenberry, you were the man. Okay, you were the man. Because everything that ever happens, if you really could trace that to a Star Trek episode somewhere, but there was this race of people and they had made these super soldiers to go to war. When the war was over, they tried to put all the super soldiers in a camp on a moon somewhere, and they went in that shit. They were scared of them. That was the GOP guy. The GOP has these crazy folks that they done bred to be frothing at the mouth over their agenda. And now they've used this agenda to get the power. And now they're kind of saying, well, we don't need to do all that. We got the power now. And the folks said, no, we're going to do this shit. Y'all said we were going to do it. We're going to do it. We fixing to kill, steal, and destroy. That's what we're going to do. So now it's like, we can't let them up in here with no guns because if they do, we might be the target. It won't be the people we intended for them to be shooting. It's going to be us. So now we got to lock that down. And they didn't think about that. And what we conservatives, you know, we progressives and people on the left were yelling this the whole time. You don't want to do that because what if you get some crazy folks? Well, good guys with guns will stop the crazy folks. But if you got a whole bunch of crazy folks with guns, what if they outnumber the good guys? What happens then? Oh, that'll never happen. That'll never happen. Well, damn it, your chickens are coming home to roost. You got some crazy son of bitches out there with guns. And then you don't want them carrying their guns, and they might carry them anyway.
All right, so what do you think is going to happen up in Cleveland? I mean, what are we going to end up with? You know, I mean, these conventions are basically trade shows for the political parties. So what are you looking to see come out of the convention?
The mainstream media would really, 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 really love some riots. They would love some 1968 type shit. They really would love it. I don't think we're going to get it. I don't think nobody on either side is enough about that life to make it happen, to actually, you know, raise some hell. I think it's going to be a Trump show. And He's going to say some
inflammatory. Is this going to be like Neil before Zod moment, you know?
That's exactly what I feel like. Yeah, it's going to be a Neil before Zod moment. And, you know, that's going to be how it's going to be played out. It's going to be a big, Trump love fest. Because anybody that's really against him, they're not going, which they should have went, so they could at least, you know, have their displeasure showed on camera as he was talking. They could be shaking their head. Because the cameras would be looking for them in the crowd anyway.
So you're saying they should all sit there and look like they downwind of a bat
now. Yeah, that's all this is going to be. You're going to see, you in the bump in the barn, the bulls done took some shits and the wind blowing through the barn in the wrong direction. So you're holding your nose and eyes watering.
But it is stunning. You've got two former presidents, Republican, who are not coming. You got the governor of the state who's not coming. So this is kind of, you got a rebuke, but the crowd loves the dude. And what was funny was yesterday, his announcement, of Pence, that was delayed because, there was shit happening and he had to delay it, right, which he really didn't need to. But, presidential. So, he comes out with his remarks, and it took him, maybe 3 to 5 minutes to get through that. And then he was just like, okay, I'm just going to do the stream of consciousness thing. And that was oh, my God, this dude is, out there. But I got to tell you, Trump is entertaining as hell. It's all theater. And for me, I have to look at it, and I know Democrats really hate to hear this, but I got to look at either one of them and go, even looking at Trump, it's really, when it comes to the issues that matter to me, neither Trump or Clinton are talking about what I need to hear from them, and there's really not much in their power as president to actually do. So I'm kind of meh, but Trump is a mess. I'll give you that.
So it's going to be some enjoyable television.
A mess, but a mess.
It's going to be some enjoyable television over the next 2 weeks. Now the thing is that next week, the week after that, we have the other show. Now, that is going to be well scripted because, and we'll be doing, so everybody understand that, we're doing the Republican show this week. Next week could be the Democratic show. Then we get back to crazy stuff that we like to talk about.
It's a layer. It's different layers of crazy.
We try to pull back all these different layers. So, be prepared. They even might have a couple of, that might be a special one night during the week. I got to figure out what night that Trump is speaking. We might need to come on the air, live tweet for that or do something, or Facebook Live our reactions to that.
Real quick, for those in the there's marches for Bernie going off next Sunday also on the 24th. There will be one in Atlanta and I think a couple other cities. If you want to find the city, go to marchforbernieusa.com. Find one in your area and get involved.
And there's still things that are going on in the Bernie world. We still down for Bernie. Something that was, moving away from the GOP thing. Today there was also a meeting of the Black Lives Matter Atlanta executive team. They trying to bring more people in. That meeting is probably.
I got rejected. They rejected me, Scout. They sent me a lovely thank you, but no thank you email a couple of months ago. I still have it.
Well, we might have to. Well, Well, we know that there's a person, and we're not going to say his name, that, you know, he reached out to us a couple of months ago on an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to come on the show. We're not going to say his name. We're not giving him no more publicity than he already did.
Oh, him. Okay. Okay.
And we know he, so we're going to let him have his, but he was cute.
But this
you know,
was before
might,
him. Nuh-uh, this was before him.
Okay, but still, he is right now in the town, he's in the second layer of every frame in Atlanta when we're talking about this issue. If he's not at the podium, he's right there next to the backside of the podium, center three. Okay, center three. But I'm gonna let him get his time in front of, but he was a little miffed with us because he wanted to come on our show along a while back and we just couldn't get down.
Well, I don't know why. I asked some simple questions, so I don't know why.
We just wanted to know some things, and maybe he knows who he is. And if he's ever willing to answer our questions, we'll be boring. But he don't have to talk to him no more because now he got mainstream media. He's kissing up the mainstream media right now. And this is one of those things that I think we need to do a show on one day. Matter of fact, it probably needs to be the show after the Democratic show, is we need to talk about activism and the media and how some people – not doing it for the cause. Matter of fact, I'm putting that down on paper now, so y'all be prepared to hear this. Not this Sunday coming up after this one, but the Sunday after that. Oh, we finna make some folks honest in the movement because they need some love too. Because we don't gave some to the politicos, we don't gave some to the lobbyists. We hadn't had it in on the activist community yet because some of y'all over there are doing the most and need to be talked about. Yeah. So we coming for you. So if you know we coming for you, oh, but let me give a shout-out. Because I meant to give a shout-out here to Erica, Representative Erica Thomas. Because she went in that, because they called out the legislators at that town hall, and she was like, yo, y'all didn't even invite us. Y'all didn't even try to talk to us. And I'm still here, so what's up? So she done brought it out. Her and D. Dawkins Handler went and called them on a press conference the other day. They, against better judgment of what other people in the political community are saying, they are standing up for the cause, and I applaud both of them. So let me give us, you know, a little clap to both of them for going out there and doing it. We got a caller right quick. Now, caller, I ain't got for 3 minutes, so you got two of them.
Oh, now you call it.
What's going on?
Oh, I was just calling in to just show y'all some love and just say hope that you're having a great summer. This is Kimberly Carter. I'm just like,
hey!
In the house.
Yeah, I'm
oh, she hooked me up.
I mean,
she hooked me up with some food and bacon.
That's right. I mean, sometimes it is in our best interest to listen and to allow ourselves to be bathed in the truth of others. So I was just listening and just calling in on the tail end just to tell you guys I hope you have a great week next week and to just keep the embers stirred.
Well, thank you.
We
will do our best, and we thank you.
And you're going to be up in Philly, right, Kimberlyn? Was she gone?
Yeah.
We lost her. Whoever's going, send us your photos, your videos, whatever you got, Down South and Dirty on Facebook, or you can hit me or Scout up personally on Facebook. I am Stacy Hopkins at ATL, and what are you on Facebook, Scout?
I'm Scout Smith. And on Twitter,
okay.
I'm ScoutSmith2014. And you also can hit us up at DSD Radio on Twitter. So make sure you follow all of those different accounts. And this is Down South and Dirty. And we are out.
Peace.